With me on Fresh Air is feminist author Elizabeth Janeway. You may know her through her children's book or through her feminist books, which include Man's World, Man's Place, and Between Myth and Mourning. Now, her new book is called Powers of the Weak, and it takes its name from a quote by Victor Turner, who in Image and Pilgrimage in Christian Culture defined inferiority as a value-bearing category that refers to the powers of the weak, often assigned in hierarchic societies to females, the poor, and outcasts. Janeway is the director of the Authors Guild and also a trustee of Barnard College. Welcome to Fresh Air.
Hi. One of the powers of the weak is to say the titles of one's books right. It's Man's World, Woman's Place.
Well, I'm sorry. I believe that.
That's all right. It's still in print. You can find it in bookstores. And I sort of feel that one should touch that stone as one goes by.
Can you outline for us the basic premises of your new book?
Sure. It really is a development, not a sequel, but a development from Man's World. That was more about women's place, an exploration of why women are assigned a place in the world of action and told to stay there and not to come out. We are obviously coming out in many ways. So, time to look at how things work in Man's World. This book is a book about power, and it's an effort to redefine power, to move beyond the dictionary definitions, which are insufficient, and to say, hey, let's see where we get if we look at power as a process, as a dynamic, as something that goes on among human beings all the time, personal level, public level, everything in between. We bargain and negotiate and run into each other and argue and use violence at times, and we may, one hopes, resolve the contradictions and come out with another step, some kind of compromise we can live with. That, I think, is the power process. I believe that's the way things work. The purpose of it is to get something done.
You say in your book that women are the central body within the category of the weak. Can you explain that for us?
Well, the great governed majority of humankind, which I labeled the weak rather ironically, rather provocatively, we have always been part of. We've never not been part of the people who were not the top people. We are also part of every minority group. But even more than that, I think the sense of division by sex, the gender division, I believe shapes the way the powerful, who are always male, not all males are powerful, but the powerful are always male, shapes the way that the powerful think about other divisions, other polarities. There's a physical basis to the difference between men and women. No arguing about it. The question is, how important is it? If you say it's very important, you can never possibly do the same things, there is no overlap of experience at all, this is the extreme condition of patriarchy. It seems to me that having arrived at a dichotomy, a polarization of that kind, the powerful tend to use the same pattern in describing and thinking about the other sorts of differences. And in some fashion, they look for a physical basis to validate, to justify black skin, mongoloid eyes. And if they don't find a physical one already present, they'll try to do it by the clothes you're allowed to wear, you know, yellow star for the Jews.
Some people describe the world in terms of opposing principles, and you can use the word yin and yang, but many people use the word the feminine and the masculine mm-hmm. principles, and you'll find that in terms of how people have described the psyche and the mind. And
indeed you do.
What does that mean to you if someone says, I mean, will you immediately stop someone and ask them to explain what they mean if they start describing things in terms of opposing male and female principles?
If I think I'd get an interesting answer, yes. Sometimes I'll just let them blather on. But it seems to me that what it means, essentially, overall, is that you cease to see either the community of humankind around these divisions, and you wipe out the sort of variety and diversity and range and changeableness, flexibility that exists in life itself. You're trying to make the world static. You're trying to define it by distinguishing one thing from another, instead of saying, what is the essence of this? How does it connect with that?
People don't say this as much as they used to, but sometimes a man reacting to feminism would say, I say, vive la différence.
Why only one? Let's have a lot of difference. Let's have a lot of potentiality.
One thing you say in your book, which I'd like you to explain, is that biology should not dictate destiny. It's an interesting point. I'd like you to explain that.
Well, that's what Freud is said to have said. But the idea that because you were born with a body of one sex, and therefore you can't do a lot of things, and therefore you are innately fitted to do certain other things, really has nothing to do with biology. It has to do with a social conception, a social myth, if you want, which tells you, persuades you, that you can't do what you're not supposed to do and that you ought to concentrate on doing something else. This can be very confusing. It certainly is very limiting. And it perpetuates the dichotomy, the polarization between the sexes, which I think is very unfortunate.
How effective do you think the ERA would be in changing the power structure?
I think it would do very useful things at the practical, pragmatic level. At present, there are some laws which theoretically uphold affirmative action and say equal wages for equal work. But you have to go and get a lawyer and fight it through yourself, or you have to institute a suit. You have to take the first action. Put it in the Constitution. Add to what's already in the Constitution that there should not be discrimination by race or country of national origin or religion. Just add the word sex to that. That's all the amendment does. Then it's against the law to discriminate. It's against the primary law of the land, and the burden of proof moves over. We don't have to prove they're discriminating. We can call in the police department, or, you know, arms of the law, call in the government and say, look, here's a prima facie case of discrimination. Get after these so-and-sos.
What does it say to you that the ERA is having so much trouble getting passed?
Well, I remember that it was 70 years from 1848, Seneca Falls Convention, to the passage of the suffrage amendment. I know that social myth has strength that it hangs on, that you can't disprove it by fact, that it has to be proved to be harmful, hampering, irrelevant to life, as it is being proved now. But, you know, there are 15 old men sitting in state legislatures someplace around this country, and maybe we're going to have to wait till they die off like the dinosaurs. I hope not, but it's possible. ERA will go through, whether this time or much faster on the second try. It will go through. The progress women have made is irreversible.
Elizabeth Janeway, in your new book, Powers of the Weak, you talk about the process of power. Now, because of the international crises that we've been witnessing, many of us have been trying to understand the culture of different countries. Mm-hmm. And I think of certain Eastern cultures, Middle Eastern countries, like Iran, in which it seems that the religion dictates a certain amount of subservience for women. And this might be just the cultural perspective that someone from the West has when viewing another culture. So I'm interested in your reaction to that. I'm sure you've been following these issues with interest. How have you been relating to the treatment of women in other cultures where from a Western perspective it would seem like the women are in fact very oppressed? But of course, if you entered that culture with the eyes of someone of that culture, you might be seeing things very differently and be bringing such different values to the understanding of lifestyle that our questions our values might be irrelevant.
Yes, it's difficult to criticize another culture because you're perfectly right. There's another structure of values and other conceptual systems. But to the extent that the economic underpinning of life is changing toward an industrial society, toward economic production and commercial establishments and big factories and so on, you're getting a shift down there that's bound to change the needs, the social needs of the people who live there. If women work outside the home, they ain't going to be able to do it very well wearing veils. Just as during the 19th century, women who had to work in mills discovered that they couldn't dress in very high fashion, and the women, as Veblen said, who were dressed in high fashion were demonstrating that their husbands were rich. This kind of thing. I think we're looking at different stages of the process of change in the real world when we look at many of the situations that exist in less developed countries. Perhaps some very wonderful new things will come out of the changes which Western women have begun to make in their lives when they are brought into a useful, fruitful contact with other cultures. At present, I think we have to be sure that we don't destroy what already exists there. For instance, there are African cultures where women have had a considerable amount of activity in the mainstream, where, however, colonialism coming in has said, oh, you don't belong out there. Go home. You can't do this job. That's happened in West Africa particularly under colonialism.
So we shouldn't repeat mistakes like that by projecting the values of
exactly.
our culture.
Exactly. I believe, I'll be at Copenhagen for a little while, and I hope to see that Western women understand that. I believe we do.
As a white woman, do you know many black feminists?
I know some. As a writer, I tend not to be terribly active as an activist in organizations, though I belong to several. But I certainly have black women writer friends who are of this persuasion, and I do indeed have contact with on committees and so on, where I sit with black women of many different backgrounds.
I think that there's somewhat of a debate within parts of the black community about whether feminism is relevant or not within the black community. Have you spoken with people about that question?
Well, let me just give you an anecdote. I was at a meeting of an arm of an educational institution which is devoted to offering training to women, working class women, through trades unions and this kind of thing. And there was a young black woman who's an official in the postal workers there. And she was talking at lunch about what she had to go through within the union with the black men in order, and postal workers union is largely black, in order to get and keep the position as an official, a union official that she now holds. She says she was tested and, pushed and any, you know, went through all the things that white women know they go through with white men when they are trying to move into a non-traditional place. Her experience was exactly the same. So I think there is a certain amount of similarity there, let me say. Look, women come out of all sorts of different places. They come off farms. They come out of inner cities. They come from lower class and middle class. And I guess in the old days when there was an upper class, some of them came from the upper class. Mrs. Belmont was very helpful in getting women's suffrage through. There are different priorities. No wonder there are different priorities. That's based on experience. Part of what says to me this is such a big, rich, irreversible movement is that there are a lot of different priorities.
What do you think the priorities of the women's movement should be, say, in the next 10 years? Though it's interesting, you say in your book that you don't think it's very important to set goals, and that we should what, think more in terms of the moment or details as they come.
But I don't think we should set goals that we feel hung up about. If you remember the agenda that came out of Houston, it was enormous. I couldn't begin to tell you. I've got it at home. But we have goals in any number of places. Now, for some people, one area will be of more concern than another. That's what I mean by not setting goals. ERA, yes, by all means. An effort for women in the paid labor force to see that work that is of comparable value, comparable worth to the company, so you can count it, I don't mean just in a philosophical way, is paid for equally.
What are some of the other priorities that, or are you not thinking in those terms, and if so, I won't pursue it?
Well, politically, I would say that we now are doing pretty well at the grassroots. I think there's a lot of local activity, and quite a lot of women in city council, on city council, school boards, state legislatures. I would say that politically our biggest push ought to be to help these women further along so that we get more women who've been in state legislatures into Congress, so that we get some more women who are now in Congress into the Senate. Let's take it ourselves. I don't want to be given anything. If they give it to you, they can take it back. Let us concentrate on building our own force, our own cadres.
What do you see in the near future in terms of the family? Since many women who want to work and who also want to have a family are faced with a real problem because there's not all that much time in a day to...
They're faced with a terrible problem, but briefly what they're faced with is a social problem, not a family problem, not a personal problem. Families need community support in a big way. They need good child care so that if you have difficulties within a family, there's a fail-safe net there to catch so that children know intimately more caring adults than they have a chance to know now. Very good for children. Ways to find out more about the way the world works. I'd love to see child care centers at places where people work, because I think it is a catastrophe that young people growing up now have so little idea of what the world of work, where mature adults have to spend a fair amount of time in order to live. Children have no idea of what it's like. No wonder they get, you know, kind of browned off about it.
Do you think presidentially organized conferences on the family are useful?
Not very. Grassroots.
we're out of time, Elizabeth Janeway. I want to thank you very much for being with us this afternoon. It's been really interesting to have you here. I've been speaking with writer Elizabeth Janeway, and her new book is called Powers of the Weak, and it's published by Knopf. She's also written other books about feminism as well as books for children. You're still writing
novels,
books for children
novel,
and novels.
Novels, no. Books for children were not really a major enterprise. I did write 6 novels. Don't leave them out. One was a book of the month, one they made a movie of.
Which one was it?
Daisy Kenyon with Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
Still comes around on The Late Show once in a while.
Elizabeth Janeway, thanks very much for being here.
Very nice to be here.